Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 49 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Jonathan Burton.
At that point in time, we were supposed to revisit targets, and we did. However, we were not permitted to reduce targets.
The Moorhead State University Board of Regents met in regular session on Thursday.
The outgoing governor of Kentucky is accusing a local lawmaker of pension spiking.
Some Democrats are attending roundtable discussions around the state.
A local volunteer will lead Grayson's hometown holiday parade.
The sheriff's office in Boyd County caught fire this morning.
In sports, the Round County Vikings head to the BGO Classic at Lexington Christian Academy this weekend.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
Cloudy skies this evening, then clearing overnight with a low around 28. We'll have a look at your region's extended forecast after this news.
The Moorhead State University Board of Regents met for its quarterly meeting on Thursday at the Adrian Dorn University Center. Performance-based funding dominated much of the meeting as officials try to meet metrics they call unfair to students and regional institutions. Jill Ratliff is the Assistant Vice President of Planning, Performance, and Effectiveness and reported on the current state of the institution in regard to meeting the state-mandated metrics. Ratliff says MSU is currently meeting 8 of 20 targets.
We are one of the top 3 institutions in the state on most of these metrics that we report on to the council. When I do a presentation, you'll see UK, you'll see Murray, and you'll see Moorhead doing very well. So even though we've not met all of our targets yet, we are making very good progress compared to the other institutions from where we were at the baseline. So that's an important thing.
Some members of the board expressed frustration with the metrics, which will cause the university to lose 2% of state funding beginning in the fall of 2021.
Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin signed an executive order yesterday in a move he says will protect state taxpayers by prohibiting former legislatures from spiking their pensions. The Greed Bill, or House Bill 299, was passed in 2005, allowing part-time citizen legislatures to spike their legislative pension using their highest 3 years of salary from any position. WKYT reports Bevin singled out Democrat Rocky Adkins in his remarks.
The system is rigged against the taxpayer. And Rocky Adkins, if he is a man of integrity and a man of class and a man who cares about the people of Kentucky, would not personally enrich himself at the expense of taxpayers just because the law allows him to do it.
Bevin's comments come after Adkins accepted a role as a senior advisor to Governor-elect Beshear. Bevin called on Beshear to follow the executive order and prevent any more pension spiking in his administration.
New plans for education reform could replace Kentucky Education Commissioner Wayne Lewis. Governor-elect Andy Beshear, who will be sworn in next week, campaigned on changes to the education system. He tells LEX18 he plans to fulfill that campaign promise.
So I'm committed to an education-first budget. The budget that I provide to the legislature will include that $2,000 across-the-board raise to teachers. It will invest in our public school system. I'm committed to it, so we're going to do it.
Lewis says he will work to serve the kids as long as he is commissioner.
Some Democratic representatives are going on a roundtable discussion tour around Kentucky. Their goal is to answer questions about the upcoming administration switch. According to WYMT, people are mainly concerned about pensions, tax cuts, expanded gaming, and education. The discussions are an attempt to bring bipartisan acts into Kentucky following the suspenseful gubernatorial election. Angie Hatton is the Democratic representative from the 94th District. She says national hot-button issues should not override coverage of statewide issues.
Maybe make up 20% of the issues that we deal with, but they get 100% of the airtime. That will be perhaps number one priority for this new governor.
Hatton also said Republicans were invited to be part of the tour, but no one responded.
As Democratic leaders move closer to drafting articles of impeachment, Kentucky Senator Mitch McConnell continues to argue that the effort is steering Congress away from its legislative duties. McConnell again followed President Trump's lead this week, claiming the impeachment inquiry is a distraction from the business Washington should be taking up.
We've argued that American families deserve better than this partisan paralysis, where Democrats literally obsess over impeachment and obstruct everything else.
The statement ignores the hundreds of bills the Democratic-led House has passed so far, including election protection measures and a reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act that lay dormant in the GOP-run Senate. Speaker Nancy Pelosi says McConnell is proud of his efforts to keep the House agenda at bay.
Senator Rand Paul wants to send 401k money to college. Paul is introducing federal legislation to allow individuals to take up to $5,250 in tax and penalty-free from their 401k or IRA each year to help pay for college or pay down student loan debt. Paul sees his bill as a step forward to deal with the problem. He says it's important for Republicans to offer a plan to relieve student debt.
It's not a partisan problem. Everybody understands it's a problem. We now have to figure out a solution that both sides could come together on. Yeah. I think ours makes financial sense. The totally free college really requires extraordinary taxes.
Parents or spouses could divert money from retirement accounts to help pay the cost of loans or tuition.
We'll have a look at more of your region's headlines right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from the Recreation and Wellness Center at Morehead State University. The Wilson Bowling Lanes in the Laughlin Building are open to the public for birthday parties, youth groups, by the hour or per game pricing. Cosmic Bowling features disco and black lights, open Tuesday through Saturday from 5 to 9 p.m. For more information and reservations, the phone number is 606-776-3457.
Tomorrow night's annual Christmas parade in Grayson will have a familiar face as Grand Marshal. Carter Cave State Resort Park Manager Chris Perry was selected by the Grayson Chamber of Commerce to fill the role in recognition of his numerous community-based efforts. One of Perry's major initiatives is a yearly promotion drive at the park to gather contributions and food to help feed hungry children in Carter County.
During the whole month of October, we accept food donations as a part of the, you know, if they bring in a non-perishable food item, I'll give them a discount for going through our haunted trail. Or if they, you know, and then we've also got local organizations and politicians and just people in general sending us money in to help fund them.
This past year's drive brought in upwards of $8,000 in funds and many food items that helped to feed more than 400 hungry students in Carter County school system. Grayson Christmas Parade Chairman Jill York says it's efforts like this that make Perry a shining example of the theme, which is this year, Celebrating the Joy of Giving. The parade starts at 6:30 p.m. tomorrow night in downtown Grayson.
The 911 facilities in Prestonburg have received a major upgrade. The new facility offers three new work areas with state-of-the-art emergency response access, backup power sources, and extra space to allow communications from other areas if the need arises. The idea behind the new facility was to bring productivity and comfort to phone operators who mostly work 12-hour shifts and cannot leave the office. Ross Shurtleff is the Prestonburg Police Sergeant. He tells WYMT the employees are the majority of the reason the renovations took place.
That is what really geared this upgrade, is we needed those people to have everything they needed to do it as best as their capabilities would allow them.
He also said giving them a nice place to work is the cherry on top of servicing the community into the new decade.
The city of Pikeville hosted a community open house Tuesday as part of its comprehensive plan, inviting community members and stakeholders to share their thoughts and ideas for Pikeville's next 5 years of growth. Executive Director of Economic Development Jill Fraley-Dotson tells WYMT the residents of Pikeville are included in one of the many focus groups city officials are working with. She believes they should have a say in the way the city grows.
We are doing a lot of different focus groups that target anything from our downtown businesses to our institutions, residents. We've even talked to some high school and junior high and middle school students about where they want their community to be.
Economic development, tourism, housing, and infrastructure were some of the topics of that meeting.
Looking toward the holiday season, the West Virginia Attorney General's office is extending a warning about scams and fake charities. By law, charities have to report salaries, budgets, and other administrative costs to the state. Those numbers can be located on the internet and will show how much of the money a charity is using to directly benefit the cause. Patrick Morrissey is the Attorney General for West Virginia. He tells WSAZ it's important for individuals to do research before donating.
You can always call our office and we'll alert people if there are any scams for a particular charity. Second, you can go online at the Secretary of State's office. They maintain an active list of bona fide charities.
Morrissey also says administrative costs should be around 10 to 20%. People and organizations are counting on donations on this Giving Tuesday throughout the holiday season and beyond.
The funerals for three people killed last month in a house explosion in Wolf County were held yesterday. The community mourned the deaths of 80-year-old Albert Vanderpool, 52-year-old Philip Vanderpool, and 48-year-old Sue Ann Vanderpool. Three other members of the family were able to escape and were taken to the hospital to be treated for burns. WKYT reports friends of the family are raising money to help the surviving members with funeral expenses and medical bills. Many questions remain as to what caused the explosion, and state police still have no update on that case. Emergency management officials said a broken natural gas line in the area has been fixed, but the gas company told reporters it has no comment.
The Boyd County Sheriff's Office caught on fire early Friday morning. Crews tell WSAZ an AC unit caught on fire on the roof of the building around 3 a.m. When Canova and England Hill volunteer fire departments arrived at the scene, flames were showing from the building. The fire was put out and firefighters cleared the scene around 4:30 a.m. The office was empty at the time of the fire and no firefighters were hurt while battling the flames.
Defense attorneys for Jacob Heil have filed motions in the case to question potential jurors, exclude some evidence from the trial, and to request the jury to visit the crash site. The former University of Kentucky student is accused of reckless homicide and DUI following a September crash last year that hit a four-year-old Marco Shimwell near Kroger Field. Shimwell would die from injuries sustained in that crash. Heil's attorneys have filed a motion to be able to question potential jurors individually about how much they already know about the case. They are also asking for the court to exclude photos of Shimwell's tennis shoes from the day of the crash. According to WKYT, the council also filed a motion to have the jurors, once selected, visit the crash site. Finally, the council is asking that Heil's preliminary breath test taken at the scene of the crash be excluded from the trial. They cite a state law saying the test is admissible for establishing probable cause, but is inadmissible to prove guilt or for sentencing. The motions were expected to be heard in court this morning. Heil's trial date is set for April 6th through the 9th of 2020.
Taking a look at your region's weather. This afternoon, 80% chance of rain with a high near 48. Tonight, a 30% chance of rain, cloudy during the early evening, then gradual clearing with a low around 28. Saturday, sunny with a high near 47. Saturday night, mostly clear with a low around 31. Sunday, increasing clouds with a high near 53. Sunday night, a 40% chance of rain, cloudy with a low around 44. Monday, 80% chance of rain, high near 57. Monday night, 80% chance of rain, low around 44.
On our feature segment today, commentator Dr. John Modaf wonders, just how green are we?
The interruption of a football game the other day by a bunch of so-called protesters bent on saving the environment from human corruption got me thinking about the carbon footprint of higher education. Approximately a bazillion people go to college at residential schools. There are thousands of such schools in the United States alone, mostly four-year undergraduate or graduate programs that can take more or less time than that. A good guess would be that the protesters, who interrupted the football game recently, would figure into today's calculations. Let's take a minute and consider the point of the protesters. The Earth needs protection from reckless human behavior that is unmaking the environment in ways that will damage the planet and all of its inhabitants except roaches. Let's grant that premise and get busy considering what kinds of behavior humans engage in that could be making things worse. Thanks to the movement, the phrase carbon footprint has come into use. Carbon is bad, and a footprint made of it is really bad. Of course, it is a metaphor for the amount of pollution created by human activity, in particular pollution that is averred to increase the atmospheric problems that are presumably leading us into disaster. Today's question: what is the carbon footprint of a four-year residential college education? And can people who engage in such wasteful, polluting, poisonous enterprises protest damage to the climate without committing hypocrisy? Just so happens that I went to college in a place called Carbondale. Let's take my case as typical and examine how much carbon footprinting was caused by my education there. As you listen to each of these areas of waste and pollution, consider how an online degree would subvert all of it. I wonder how many of the protesters last week were enrolled in online programs. Could not they have submitted their protestations digitally? Anyway, onto the inventory of true environmental college costs. Because I was, along with 10,000 others, living and going to class on campus, these costs were incurred, true carbon-clomping costs, expensive in every sense of the term, and deadly to the planet. First, buildings, resource extraction, production of materials, transportation and erection, finishing, maintenance, HVAC, depreciation, upkeep, modification, and constant challenges to comply with mountains of regulations. All of this adds up to huge carbon footprinting, size 14. Next, classes, books, papers, ink, lighting, electricity, and of course travel to and from, much of which involved driving, another major contribution to carbonization in Carbondale. Traveling to and from classes is not the only huge transport-based damage. People travel home and back regularly, often driving cars or riding trains or planes. More massive, unnecessary contributions to the Carbondale carbon footprint. Add all of the incidental carbon-spewing activities of students, including their recreation centers, student unions, restaurants, electronic entertainments, and yes, their tuba ensembles. All of it means somewhere along the line carbon is being generated in the name of higher education. I think we need to rename all campuses Carbondale and admit we are not green at all when compared to alternatives. The protesters need to be issued mirrors. I'm John Modaff.
Dr. John Modaff is a professor of speech here at Morehead State University. It's 49 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Jonathan Burton and Chaz Jenkins, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio right here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Thank you so much for joining us on this dreary Friday afternoon. Ty Martin has a look at sports right after this.
Support for MSPR is provided by Downtown Morehead Incorporated and the Kentucky Folk Arts Center, presenting the 35th Appalachian Holiday Arts and Crafts Fair, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th. A holiday tradition and open to the public inside the Laughlin Health Building on East Main Street in Morehead. More than 100 vendors from Kentucky, Ohio, and West Virginia, handmade arts and crafts, antiques, seasonal ornaments, and decorations. More information on Facebook under Downtown Morehead.
The Vikings and Eagles fly this weekend. For WMKY Sports, I'm Ty Martin. Taking a look at boys basketball action in the 16th region this weekend, Fleming County hosts Ripley Union out of Ohio tonight. Fairview plays host to Covenant out of Barboursville, West Virginia, and Boyd County heads to Russell. All three of those games are set for 7:30 p.m. On Saturday, Ashland Blazer will take part in the showcase at George Rogers Clark. The Tomcats face Madison Central at 4 p.m., West Carter plays host to Russell, and Raceland travels to Daytona at 3:30. Bath County plays host to East Carter at 5 p.m. for the first round of the EKC tournament. Taking a look at girls' action in the 16th region tonight, Bath County will face off with Dayton at 8 p.m. at the Lady Royal Showcase at Mason County. Elliott County welcomes Raceland at 12:30 on Saturday. East Carter meets Bath County at the EKC tournament at 3 p.m., and West Carter hosts Russell at 6 p.m. in the first round of the EKC tournament. The Round County boys basketball team heads to the BGO Classic this weekend at Lexington Christian Academy. The Vikings face off with Frederick Douglass after opening the season with a win at home and a loss on the road this week. The Broncos have one win over Henry Clay so far this season. Round head coach Sean Thacker says even this early in the season, the team can scout and prepare.
Coaches are always tinkering, they're always working on things, they're always trying to make things better and changing things, whether changing personnel lineups, defenses, but we kind of know what to expect from them.
Game time is set for 2:45 p.m. For the first time since 2013, Morehead State Volleyball returns to the postseason, competing in the 2019 National Invitational Volleyball Championships. Morehead State also enters the 32-team field after becoming the first Ohio Valley Conference program to accept an at-large bid in the event's 10-year history. The Eagles are the first OV team to compete in the event since 2017, when SIUE accepted the league's automatic bid. Head coach Jamie Gordon says his team will be ready to face off with High Point on Saturday.
They're a team that has traditionally been, over the last couple years, competing in the NCAA tournament. They've got some strong youth balanced with some really good experience, and they've had a real successful season. I think anytime you can put together plus 20 wins, it shows a lot about your coaching staff and the core of players that you have, and so we know that it's going to be quite a challenge.
First serve for the Eagles' NIVC opening round matchup is set for 4:30 p.m. Saturday. Broadcast information and live stats are available on msueagles.com. Morehead State men's basketball heads on the road for a showdown against Illinois State tomorrow. After winning their first four games, the Eagles went on a four-game losing skid before picking up a win over IUPUI on Wednesday night. Head coach Preston Spradlin says the tough non-conference schedule has been a good teaching opportunity for his team.
You know, execution has been a big focus for us. Just realizing time and score, when you really have to execute and grind the team out to get a really good first shot, sets up your ability to get a really good second shot. It allows you to set up your defense so that you can kind of play in the balance of the game like that. So those games really expose you when you don't do a good job in those areas, but it gives you something to come back and work on.
Illinois State comes into the contest with a 3-5 record, while Morehead State is 5-4 on the season so far. Tip-off between the Eagles and the Redbirds is set for 7 p.m. Saturday night in Normal, Illinois. The game will be broadcast live on ESPN Plus and can be heard on our sister station WIVY 96.3 FM. After signing six future Eagles during the fall recruitment, the Morehead State softball program has added a pair of preferred walk-ons to its class of 2020 signees. MSU head coach Samantha Jones and her staff are pleased to announce the additions of Carissa Sablehouse and Kelsey Sparks. Jones says Sparks, a native of Bowling Green, has ties to MSU.
Her grandfather played football here back in the 60s, won an OVC championship, so he had a great career here. And she obviously fell in love with Morehead State due through, like, conversations and stories that he used to tell. You know, she wants to be, like, a pre-vet, so I think we also have a very strong program in the state of Kentucky and this half of the country.
Sablehouse, a native of North Vernon, Indiana, becomes an Eagle after being named an all-area catcher at Jennings County High School. Jones says Sablehouse is looking to go into the ROTC program at MSU.
And I think that's such an important part of her life. And obviously softball is a huge passion. She just kind of fell in love with Morehead State University as well as just the city of Morehead. And to be able to balance ROTC and to be a Division I athlete, you know, we were able to figure out a way to make that happen here at Morehead State. And so we're excited for her and what that type of culture can bring to the team.
Perkins and Sablehouse will enroll at Morehead State in fall semester of 2020. Officials within the Pioneer Football League recently made their picks for this season's all-conference teams. Junior slot receiver Landon Hurst is one member of the Morehead State University football team selected for second-team All-PFL. Head coach Rob Tenure says Hurst had several great performances this season and will be glad to have him back next year.
An outstanding year, over 50 catches for us. I think everyone in our conference knows that he's one of the best players. You know, a lot of teams bracketed him and double-covered him a lot, especially on third downs. And, you know, if he would have had four or five more touchdowns, he probably would have been first team. So he had a great year and looking forward to his senior year as well.
Hurst is a native of Shelbyville, Kentucky. Nearly 60% of his catches this season resulted in first downs. He had a career best day at Drake with 11 catches for 123 yards and a score. And finally, in sports this afternoon, the University of Kentucky Wildcats will be at home tomorrow night against Farley Dickinson University. The Cats are 6-1 this season, although FDU is at 2-5. Kentucky head coach John Calipari says they are a very capable team. This game is set to take place at 4 p.m. and will be broadcast on the SEC Network. And that's going to do it for sports. For WMKY, I'm Ty Martin.
Support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Men's basketball host Marshall at 7 p.m. on Monday, December 16th, and women's basketball next home game is Thursday, December 19th, hosting Asbury College. Tickets and more information from the Eagle Athletic Office at 783-2089 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. Stocks surged on the back of a strong U.S. jobs report that easily topped analyst expectations as Wall Street wrapped up a choppy week of trading, and the Dow Industrials soared 337.27 to finish at 28,015.06. The S&P 500 was up 28.48 at 3145.91, and the NASDAQ Composite was up 85.83 at 8656.53. Virtually all of your different sectors were up today, with the exception of certain utility stocks. Of course, those being interest-sensitive, as interest rates moved up today on government bonds, some utilities sold off. Shares of 3M led the Dow strong gains, rising more than 4%, and the energy sector was the best performer in the S&P 500, jumping 2%. Industrials and financials both rose more than 1%. Google parent Alphabet was up about 1% and hit an all-time high. Apple shares also reached all-time high levels, gaining almost 2%, and Goldman Sachs in the financial sector jumped about 3.5%. And the U.S. economy did add 266,000 jobs in November, according to figures released by the Labor Department. Going into the report, economists expected a gain of about 187,000. The unemployment rate itself fell to 3.5%, matching its lowest level since 1969. And as mentioned, interest rates were up today with Treasury yields climbing, with the 10-year Treasury closing at 1.84% and the 2-year at 1.62%. And these are the highest levels since October. And, of course, rhetoric regarding trade continues to move the markets back and forth. The week started out with a positive feeling toward trade, but then comments by the president in midweek to the effect that a trade deal could wait until after the election put a damper on trade hopes. And today there was not any really substantial news on trade. Larry Kudlow, director of the National Economic Council, did say that Trump is, quote, prepared to walk away from the negotiations if some conditions are not met. And the president has said that if we cannot get the enforcement and the assurances, then we will not go forward. And of course, both sides now have less than 10 days to go before Washington is poised to impose even more tariffs on Chinese goods. Tariffs on another $156 billion in Chinese goods will go into effect on December 15th. In the commodities markets, oil was very strong, up 1%, finishing at $59 a barrel. Gold was down 1.2% at $1,465.10 an ounce. In Europe, stocks had a good day, with the Stock 600 index up 1.2%. Asian markets were strong as well, with the Shanghai up 0.4% and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong up 1%. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Fifth Third Bank up 38 cents at 30 and a quarter. Dollar General down 37 cents at 154.73. UPS up 251 at 117.52. Marathon Petroleum up 34 cents at 60.19. And Anthem was down 91 cents to finish at 285.39. Reporting for WMKY, this is Bud Luke from the Ashland offices of Robert W. Baird.
Support for MSPR comes from Downtown Moorhead Incorporated, presenting Hometown Holidays in Downtown Moorhead from 5 to 8 p.m. on Saturday, December 7th, an annual holiday tradition for the entire family. Local Main Street merchants will be open with refreshments and holiday treats, live music, caroling, and entertainment. Pictures with Santa Claus, wagon rides, and a performance by the Cave Run Symphony Orchestra at 8 p.m. at the Moorhead Conference Center. More information on Facebook under Downtown Moorhead Incorporated.
And that's going to do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Tanner Boyd, Joe Lewis, Greg Jenkins, Paul Hitchcock, Nacogdoches Miller, Shamari Mosley, Wyatt Melton, Sarah Mead, Lori Likens, Ty Martin, Chanasty Davis, and Chaz Jenkins. KNN's Will Clark, WUKY's Josh James, the Robert Baird Company's Bud Luke, and our feature segment today came from Moorhead State University's own Dr. John Modaff. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, Kentucky. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Jonathan Burton and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.